We're holding on with Vov Onward Bays, 9 lines from the bottom by the two dots. The Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda, and we talked about yesterday what it said in the Mishnah, that you're not allowed to, during the days before a Goyish Chaga, you're not allowed to do the various kinds of business with them. And we mentioned, among other things, you're not allowed to lend them money, or you're not allowed to lend them money, or to pay them back, or to lend them, or for them to borrow from you, or to pay them back a loan, or to have them pay you back. So the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda Oymen Ephraim Mehen Cholo, Rabbi Yehuda had said that you are allowed to have them pay you back during those days, because Rabbi Yehuda had said in the Mishnah, because then he's going to feel bad that now he had the money in his possession, and now he's having to give it away and pay off his loan. And the Chacham answered him, and the Chacham said, listen, he may be Meitzer right now, he may be feel bad about it now, but he's going to feel good soon that now he's rid of this loan. So the question is, what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? For less than Rabbi Yehuda, after Pisha Meitzer Akshav Sameachu L'Achazman, does Rabbi Yehuda not hold of that concept, that we have to look not just at the immediate thing, but what's going to be after that? We find Rabbi Yehuda himself pays attention to that in a different context. V'hatanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, we learn in a braisa that in connection with the dinim of Chalamoyed, that Rabbi Yehuda says, Isha loitosu b'moyed, a woman is not allowed to apply plaster on Chalamoyed. They would apply plaster to their face, and then afterwards they would take it off. It would make the skin underneath it redder, where the plaster had been on, and it would make her look nice. So Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to do that on Chalamoy with Nishan Nivul Hula, because it makes her look unattractive. As long as the plaster is on her face, so yes, it's going to make her look good afterwards, but right now during Chalamoy it doesn't look good. So here Rashi mentions the fact that it makes her skin of her face look red and healthy. Elsewhere in Moed Katan, Rashi points out also it removes unwanted hair, goes along with the plaster. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda says that's no good. The point is, during Yom Tov, during Chol Moed itself, she should be attractive. However, Rabbi Yehuda would agree, when there's enough time that she'll be able to take it off still during Chol Moed, and it'll have accomplished its effect and make her look nice. So say, for example, to do it at the beginning of Chol Moed, and it takes a day or and it takes a couple of days, and then another day or two, she'll be able to take it, so she's able to have the hanaf from it doing Chol Moed. Then Rabbi Yehuda says then she is allowed to put it on Chol Moed, because afapi shemitzira, even though right now it makes her feel bad and it's uncomfortable and unattractive or whatever right now, smechihi lachazman, but it's going to help her look nice later on. And the later on is still during Chol Moed itself, and therefore that's fine. Well, by the same logic, then, you should say over here that the goy right now feels bad about losing the money, but then he feels good afterwards that he's out of the debt. So why is Rabbi Yehuda being inconsistent? So the Gemara says, Amr Rav Nachman Le'Yitzchak. So Rav Nachman Le'Yitzchak says, listen, Hanach Le'Huchas Moed, set aside the halachas of Chol Moed. You can't really prove anything from them. Jekulam Meitzer Achshav Simcha La'Achazman. All of them, really, the whole concept, everything that the Chachamim allowed, and anything that the Chachamim allowed you to do Chol Moed, is something where right now you have Tsar, and later on you're going to have, Sameach. Rashi mentions, for example, let's say, for example, the Or to prepare a meal or whatever. It's a lot of hassle to do all those things, but the reason is because afterwards you're going to have hana from it. So there's no problem in Rabbi Yehuda saying the same thing then as far as the plaster. That doesn't show that he would apply that in other areas of halacha. That's one answer. Ravina gives a different answer. When it comes to the goy paying off the loan, he's always going to be feeling bad, because he's going to think to himself that he would have had some way. He would have had some way of getting out of it and not having to pay back. So now when he does in fact have to pay it off, he's not going to feel good about it. On the contrary, Rabbi Yehuda says even afterwards, there's never going to be, at least not doing between now and his Chaga, that he's going to be grateful for it and go thank his Getchka. On the contrary, he's more likely to be feeling bad about it and speaking negatively against his Getchka that put him in this state. So therefore, so it's one thing. And the writer points out, listen, you know, the fact is that right now he's feeling bad about it, and we're not so worried that on the day of the Chogger itself he's going to already be feeling good and go thank his Getchka. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says that's not a problem. So again, according to the first answer, because Chol HaMoed is special, and according to the second answer, because he's never really going to feel good about it, because he's always going to feel that he would have had some kind of trick, some kind of trick up his sleeve or something to get out of paying this loan. Okay? So the Gemara says, "Masnisim deloik Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha." Now our Mishnah did not draw any kind of distinction what kind of loan it is, in particular whether it's a milval peh or a milva b'shtar. Do you have a written document about the loan or not? So now the Gemara says, "Masnisim deloik Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha." Our Mishnah then, in that regard, does not go like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. The Tanya, we learn a brayser, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, milva b'shtar in nifrein mehen. It is true, like our Mishnah says, that you can't make them collect during the days before, you can't collect from them, but you can't make them pay on the days before their chaga a loan that's in a shtar, because again, then, you know, and now, as the Chacham say, he may feel bad about it now, but he'll feel good about it soon enough. And after all, as long as you have the shtar, he's still, you know, it's still being held over his head, and he has to pay it. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says milva al peh. But when it's a verbal loan, nifroin mehen, that you can make them pay. Because like saving the money from them, because a milva al peh, the goy is going to feel like he's going to much more easily be able to get out of it. Especially, you know, keep in mind in goyish courts, and the goy is not necessarily going to be subject to our Jewish bate dinim. In goyish courts, they'll accept one witness, they'll accept hearsay and all kinds of things. So with and there's no shtar even, so it is much more likely that he's going to deny the loan or something like that. And therefore, so now when he pays it, then you can't say he's going to be happy about it. So the Gemara says that the Gemara says Yosef Rav Yosef Achore de Rav Abba. One time Rav Yosef was sitting behind Rav Abba, the Yosef Rav Abba came to Rav Huna, and Rav Abba was sitting in front of Rav Huna. The way they had the Bote Medrash in those days was set up, you'd have the Rosh Hashiva in front facing the Talmidim, you'd have the senior Talmidim would be in the front, and the junior Talmidim, as they were more and more junior, as they were on lower and lower levels, would sit further and further back. So here you have Rav Abba was in the front row as one of the senior Talmidim, and Rabbi Yosef is a row behind him, meaning that he's not as great a Talmud yet. The Yosef Vakomer, so Rav Huna was sitting and saying, in one area of halacha, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda ben Korcha, namely what we just said about the difference between the two kinds of loans. And he also said the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, referring to a completely different case outside of Masechta Avodah Zarah altogether. Often the Gemara will do that. Often the Amoraim would talk like that. Keep in mind, of course, you know, the Amoraim are not just teaching beginner Talmidim. They're teaching really, really high-level Talmidim, so they could speak briefly like that and expect that people are going to understand which statement of Rabbi Yehuda they're referring to. So, the halacha, like Rabbi Yehuda ben Korcha, what we just said about the distinction between a milva al peh and a milva b'shtar, and Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rav Huna mean when he says the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda is in the following case? Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, the Tanan really is a Mishnah. Hanosin Semel of Fabel, we learned this back in Ben Balakama, and it comes up in a few places in Shas. A person gives wool to a dyer to dye. Hanosin Semel of Saba. A person gives wool to a dyer to dye for him. Let's boil like Odom. He asks the dyer. He placed an order with the dyer to dye it red. Vitzovei Shochar, and instead he dyed it black. Or Shochar Vitzovei Odom, or the other way around, he dyed it black, or it was supposed to be dyed black, and instead he dyed it red. What do we do with it? Rav Meir Oymer Noisin Loi Dmei Samrei. Rav Meir says that the dyer has to pay back the owner of the wool the value of the wool. Namely, Rav Meir holds, as the Gemara explains in the relevant sugya in Bava Kamma, Rav Meir holds that Polam Shanami Das Bailov Nikla Gazlan. A person does differently than what he was supposed to do, what he was ordered by, then he's considered a Gazlan. Well, the rule with a Gazlan is that he's koina the thing with the Shinui, in this case, the irrevocable Shinui that it was dyed and can never be made undyed wool again. So now he keeps the wool for himself and he pays back the owner. So that's Reb Meir. Reb Yehuda Omer, Reb Yehuda says, no, then if it comes out that then he's gaining from it, we want to have Yodei Latachtona, we want to have that the dyer is going to have the lower hand, meaning that he's not necessarily going to be koning this wool, but rather we say like this, Ima Shvach Yosra Leitzia, if the improvement in the value of wool is greater than the expenses that he put into it, Nosin Leitzia, then the owner of the wool only has to pay him for his expenses. So one of his expenses means the actual dye itself, the wood for firing up the vat, the amount that he would be paid for his work, etc. So say for example that altogether the dyer's expenses and labor and everything add up, let's say to $10, and now with the dyeing, the fact is the wool was dyed a different color than the guy expected, but still, you know, it's dyed wool, it's got a value to it. Now the increase in value, let's say was $15. Then he's paying him only $10. If he had done what he was supposed to, then he'd pay him $15 plus maybe even a little extra. Now, like this, he's required to pay him only $10 because that's the amount because that's the amount of the expenses. You might see it, you say, and if the expenses are greater than the shvach, so the other way around, the expenses were $10, the shvach is only $5, noisem loyas es shvach, then he pays him only for the shvach. So one way or the other, he has the lower hand. That's the point of Rabbi Yehuda. So now Rabbi Huna is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in that regard. How exactly we define shvach and yitziah in this regard is itself. The Tosfos there in Bava Kamma gives a discussion over there about certain details of how we calculate these amounts. But whatever, the point is that unlike Reb Meir, who says that he was koneh with shinui, and therefore that now he keeps the wool, and just pays him for the value of the raw wool, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the one who placed the order does get the wool, but then he pays only the lesser of the shvach of the yitzia, as the case may be. Well, the Gemara says, "Adrinu Rabbi Yosef la'ape." Rabbi Yosef turned his face away, as if to say that I disagree with this. I can't accept that the halacha should be like that. To understand, to say the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, why Rav Huna would have to say that, istrich. We need to know that. We need to be told that. Sakurat Chamina. Otherwise, you would have thought, Yochid v'Rabim, halacha k'Rabim. You have a machlokas of the Yochid, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, and the Rabim, the Tanakama and our Mishnah, who makes no such distinction between the different kinds of loans, Alper or Bashtar. So therefore, Kamash Malan, halacha k'Rabim Yochid. So here we have to be told that halacha is like the yachid. Therefore, I'm not surprised then that Rav Huna has to say that the halacha in this regard is like Rav Yeshua ben Korcha. Ella halacha k'Rav Yehuda lama li, but why would he even need to say that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda? Pshita, the machloikas v'achakach stam hilchsa stam. We know there's a general rule that when you have a machloikas tanoim in one mishnah, and then later on you have a stam mishnah according to one of those opinions, hilchsa k'stam, then the halacha is like the stam mishnah. Because then what it means is that when Rebbe was composing the mishnayos, when Rebbe was finalizing the mishnayos as we have them, so to begin with he knew there's machlokas about it, but then later on, it means that he figured out the reason why the one opinion says what he says, and decided, you know what, I accept that opinion. He, I mean, when we say Rebbe himself, we don't just mean Rebbe himself. We mean he and his chacham and the chachamim of his beis medrash decided, you know what, this opinion seems to be correct based on Torah logic, and therefore we should follow it, and therefore they established a stam mishnah to express it. Well, then in that case, and it's none. And we have a Mishnah in, so we have like this, so Hilchasak Hassam, so the halacha, we're like a Sam Mishnah. Well, here you have, Machloikas Bababa Kama, or Sam Bababa Metzia. Here you have like this, you have the Machloikas that we just said as far as the wool is, in Bava Kama, and the Sam Mishnah, that's relevant to this is in Bava Metzia. Abditznan, you have a Mishnah in Bava Metzia, Kolam Shana Yoda Latachtona. Whenever a person does something different than he was supposed to, then Yoda Latachtona, which is exactly this case with the wool, because he was given an order to dye the wool this color, and instead he dyed it that color. So Yoda Latachtona, which would be like Rabbi Hoda, Bachola Choseboy. And anybody who goes back on his decision. So the Mishnah talks over there about a case where a person hired workers and then they renege on the deal and don't want to work for him. You have other cases over there that the Gemara discusses where people made a deal to do something and then one of them retracts from it. So again, Yadar Lachatona, he has the lower hand. The point is, this Kol HaMashani Yadar Lachatona is clearly like Rabbi Yehuda. So that being the case, says Rabbi Yosef, then why would Rav Huna even have to say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? Wouldn't it be so obvious? Tosfos points out that anyway, you have a rule when you have a machlokas Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is generally like Rabbi Yehuda. But first of all, Tosfos points out, you have a relevant Gemara in Eruvin, which brings a whole bunch of such rules of how we know. When we have a machlokas, Reb Pliny and of this Tana and that Tana, Reb Pliny and Reb Pliny, the halacha is like Reb Pliny. So we have rules that the Gemara gives over there in Eruvin, but not everybody agrees to that rule. So therefore, fine, it would be reasonable enough that Reb Huna would have to specifically say the halacha is like Reb Yehuda, meaning that we don't necessarily agree with those rules. In addition, you also have a concept that halacha is Sam Mishnah, the Gemara mentions anyway, the halacha is like a Sam Mishnah, whether there was a machlokas before it or not. So in fact, Tosfos says that even if you're going to say, you don't say halacha k'stam mishnah, but still, here in effect, since you have the machlokas and then the stam, in effect, since as Rashi says, a machlokas and then stam means that Rebbe and the chachamim of his base medrash, which included, the point is, when Rebbe composed the Mishnayos, he had all the chachamim of Eretz Yisrael were involved with him in the job. So therefore, so it means that now we do have a rab and we have a yochid in the earlier Mishnah. We have the opinion of Reb Meir, and then we have, originally it was only a Yochid against a Yochid, Reb Meir against Reb Yehuda. But now that we have a Stam Mishnah to that effect, in effect we have a Yochid against the Rabbim, and still again the Halacha is going to be like the Rabbim, namely Reb Yehuda's opinion, which is subscribed to by Rebbe and his Beis Medrash. So that being the case, why is Rav Huna even having to say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? So therefore, Rabbi Yosef, now in front of Rav Huna, turned his face away and was upset. Why would Rav Huna have to be, so to speak, wasting our time and saying such a thing? Marsha and Maram discuss this a little more, where we're not going against the rule halacha kerabim, then when you have also when you have a machlokas and then a stam, then there's no question the halacha is going to be like the stam. But over here you do usually have the rule that Reb Meir against Reb Yehuda, the halacha is like Reb Yehuda, and again there are those who don't hold that rule at all, and so forth. But nevertheless, we have to resort to the fact that you have machlokas and then a stam. So the Gemara says, "Rav Huna." So why did Rav Huna have to say that was the halacha? And the reason is, "Mishum de'ain state of the Mishnah," because there's no specific order to the Mishnah. Just because you have this Mishnah and then another Mishnah doesn't necessarily mean that they were taught in that order. Maybe in fact, Rebbe composed them and taught them out of order. The Iklamim is Stam Tana Bereish of Akak Apafolikus. On the contrary, it could be. That it was the other way around. Maybe first the Sam Mishnah was taught, and later on the Mishnah with the Machalokas. And then it would be the other way around. Then we have a rule usually that the Halacha is not like the Sam Mishnah, because then it would be the other way around. Rebbe originally thought there's only one opinion on the subject, and later on he found out that, you know what, there is another opinion. So therefore, so the Rav Huna says, in that case, then you have to say the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, because otherwise how would you know? Tosfos elsewhere in Baba Kama Kaka, where it discusses in connection with this whole matter of the wool, and the Gemara Meh has this whole discussion over there as well, including this whole matter of the Seder of Mishnayos. Tosfos points out over there that, of course, when Rebbe finally compiled the Mishnayos as we have them, then he put them in a certain order. But we're talking about when he taught his Talmidim to begin with, the material that eventually became the Mishnayos, did he necessarily teach it in the same order? Even nowadays, even after Rebbe set up the Mishnayos, even within one Masechta, sometimes you have different opinions which parrot goes first. We had in Sanhedrin, for example, whether the 10th and 11th Parakim, what we learned as the 11th Parak Chelek, is in the Mishnayos is printed as the 10th Parak, and then Elohein HaNachnokin is printed as the 11th Parak, and then you have other examples like that, where you have Parakim interchanged here and there in Shas. But anyway, the point is that, Huna says, in that case, you can't say that there's a Seder to these things such that you can say that necessarily that means the Halacha is like the Stam Mishnah. Well, the Gemara says, Yichachi, well then, if you're going to say Ein Seder the Mishnah, then it's true. How could you apply these rules as well? The fact is, we do know a rule that when you have a Machloikas and then a Stam, the Halacha is like a Stam. Rav Huna is not disagreeing with that rule. So kol machloikas v'achak sam lema ain seder the Mishnah. Whenever you have that kind of thing of machloikas and then a sam Mishnah, we should have to say that there's ain seder the Mishnah, and we can't necessarily pass them like the sam Mishnah. And the fact is that the Gemara says in Yevamos that we do have such a rule, and Rav Huna is not arguing with it. So that being the case, then fine. Then what's the why are we saying that there's so why is he saying ain seder the Mishnah? And the answer is Rav Huna will answer you, Kilo Yamrinan, Ein Seder. You know, when we don't say Ein Seder, the Mishnah is B'chod HaMasechta. Within one Masechta, then yes, we can assume that Rebbe taught the Mishnayos of a particular Masechta in the order in which we have them, and then when he compiled that Masechta, then he put it in that sense, and he kept that same order in which he had taught it to his Talmidim. Which is, by the way, why we have sometimes, as we know, in Mishnayos, sometimes you'll have the Mishnah will digress and talk about unrelated topics for several, sometimes even for several Mishnayos in a row, because since it was all taught Baal Peh, so therefore Rebbe would say, and Baal Peh, you would have, let's say, having learned a halacha that has a certain structure, then Rebbe would teach his Talmidim one after the other halachas that have the same structure. Think of, for example, in Megillah, where you have all the Ein Bains. Once it mentions that Ein Bain, there's no difference between Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni as far as the halachas of Purim, except for certain things. Then, by the way, it also goes through a whole bunch of other Ein Bains from all over other areas of halacha as well. And the same thing, there's other examples of that in various places in Shas. Very well, within one Masechta, that's what it means. Rebbe, for example, would have been teaching his Talmidim the Halacha Sepurim. He got to that point, Ein Vein Oder Rishon L'Oder Sheni. Then, since we're learning Baal Peh, so Rebbe tells them, you know, while we're at it, let's do the other halachas that have that same structure, Ein Vein this and that, Ella such and such, and that way we'll remember them. And then when he actually compiled the Mishnayos, then he kept that same order. So within one Masechta itself, we'll say that there is a Seder, and therefore if we have a Machlokas and then a Stam, means the Halacha is like a Stam. But Rav Huna would say, when it comes across two Masechtas, Amrinan, then we do have to say Ein Seder the Mishnah. Who says that Rebbe necessarily taught one this particular Masechta before that one? When he arranged them, when he compiled the Mishnayos, yeah, he put them in a certain order, and therefore every so often the Gemara will ask, like for example, we had at the beginning of Shavuos, actually, the Gemara didn't ask it over there, but Tosfos pointed out, but whatever. Sometimes the Gemara itself will point out, for example, at the beginning of Sota, why it's after Masechta Nazir, or at the beginning of Tainis, the Gemara will ask why it's there after Masechta Rosh Hashanah, and there's other examples like that. Because when Rebbe first taught the material that became the Mishnayos, they didn't necessarily do this Masechta before that one, it might have been in a different order. So therefore, Rav Huna says, well, Baba Kama and Baba Metzia are two different Masechtas. So what if you have a Stam Mishnah in Baba Metzia? Maybe Rebbe originally taught the material of Baba Metzia before Baba Kama. So therefore, I can't use the rule Machlokas V'Achak of Stam. Therefore, I have to explicitly say the Halacha is like Rebbe Yehuda. Again, as Tosfos points out, he could have resorted to the rule that says anyway, when you have Rav Meir against Rav Yehuda, the halacha is generally like Rav Yehuda, but not necessarily does Rav Huna even have to agree to that rule in the first place. Fine. So the Gemara says, Rav Yosef, what would Rav Yosef answer to that? So what was his problem with what Rav Huna said? Because he says, call the Nezikin, Chodem Masechta. The entire Nezikin is considered one long Masechta. Rashi explains that Nezikin, that the whole Nezikin, means the three Bavas. Bava Kama, Bava Matsya, Bava Blaster. You get down to it, really. Bava means a gate. And literally, Bava Kama means the first gate, the middle, Bava Matsya, the middle gate, Bava Blaster, the last gate. And therefore, they're actually can be seen as three gates, three sections of one big Masechta called Nezikin. You have a similar kind of thing, by the way, with Masechta Kalim. So that large Masechta, Nezikim, would consist of 30 Prokim then, 10, 10, and because the three Bavas are 10, 10, and 10. You find a similar thing, actually, with Mishnayis Kalim. Mishnayis Kalim is also divided into 30 Prokim, and the Tesefta on Kalim is actually divided into a Bava Kama, a Bava Metzia, and a Bava Basra. So when you refer to Tesefta on Kalim, you can't just refer to Perek and Brisa. You have to also refer to the Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, or Bava Basra within that. Anyway, so Rabbi Yosef says, well, the same thing with the three Bavas, they're really only it's a long Masechta, so therefore it ended up getting divided into three. But it is fundamentally one Masechta, and therefore, yes, Levi would have necessarily taught the material in it in order, and therefore we know Sam v'achakach machlokas v'achakach Sam halacha k'sam, and therefore there was no reason for Rav Huna to say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda when it would be clearly obvious according to that rule. There are understandings among Mefroshim that Kulam Ezikin Chodem Masechtihi means not just the three Babas, but maybe even the entire Seder Nezikin is considered for that purpose one long Masechta. Seder Nezikin, really, you kind of have, there is sort of a logical progression through it. You have the three Babas, which deal with Dinim Mominus, then you have Sanhedrin, which deals with Dinim Nefoshis, Makkos, which is kind of a sequel to it, and deals with a couple of other punishments that Beis Din will do, Malkus and then sending a person off to the Orem Miklat, etc. And then after that, the rest of the Masechtas after that are all kind of sequels to either the Babas or Sanhedrin. Shavuos, that talks about the last part of it, as we learned, talks about Shavuos that are done in Beis Din, or Masechta Avodah Zarah is kind of a sequel now to the part of Masechta Sanhedrin that dealt with the dinim of a person worshipping Avodah Zarah, and so forth, and the whole rest of the Seder is kind of expanding on topics that were mentioned in one of those Masechtas. So that being the case, there's justification for actually calling the whole thing one big Masechta. Anyway, so that's one reason.
Why can't you say the Machlokes of Machlokes Tam applies just to these three Masechtas?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, are the Gemara, the case that we're dealing with over here does in fact involve only those three Masechtas. Because after all, we're talking about Bava Kama, it only involves two of them, Bava Kama and Bava Metzia. Right. So we could just say that. We could say that it just has to mean the three Babas, and that's how Rashi learns over here. I'm just informing you, there are Mefroshim who learn that the expression in the Gemara, Kol Nezikin, Chodem Masechtihi, is in fact referring to the whole Seder Nezikin. And I'm just saying there's a logic behind that as well. Be that as it may, therefore Rabbi Yosef would say, well then, in that case, we have the Machlokas and the Stam are in the same Masechta. So then we're back to, why does Rav Huna need to tell us that Allah is like Rabbi Yehuda? And that's why Rabbi Yosef was upset. So that's one reason, the Gemara says.
Maybe you need Rav Huna's opinion to apply outside of these three Masechtas, or however they're organized.
Okay, well, that's the thing. So Rav Huna does not hold that Kulam Ezikin Chodem Masechta. He holds the three Babas are considered for this purpose actual separate Masechtas, and therefore you don't have the rule of Machlokas V'Achakach Stam, because we say Ein Seder L'Mishnah across Masechtas. So it's a Machlokas, basically, in other words, comes down to Rav Huna and Rav Yosef are arguing, is Nezikin, however we define Nezikin for this purpose, one Masechta or multiple Masechtas, that's all. Okay. So the Gemara says, "V'boisema." Another reason why Rabbi Yosef might have been upset, and why Rav Huna has to say it, "Mishum tichatoni lagabe hilchsa psiksa." Not just because we have a Sam Mishnah that says "kol mashana yoda la tichatoni," but because that statement is among a bunch of other statements in the Mishnayos that are given as black letter halachas. Because the Mishnah says they're kol mashana yoda la tichatoni, v'chol achozev yoda la tichatoni. The Mishnah says they're back to back this point of kol mashana yoda la tichatoni and that it also says, and now the Kol Mishana doesn't really belong there in that Mishnah. It's only, since the Mishnah there is talking about a case where a person hires workers, and then they renege on him, and they don't show up for the job, or they demand higher pay, or whatever. And the Mishnah describes then what the employer's rights are in that case. So now, so there's no reason to even mention Kol Mashana Yad Al Achatona. Why is the Mishnah doing it? To tell us the same way as the Kol Achozaba Yad Al Achatona is definitely agreed to, and it's relevant over there, and it's relevant to that Mishnah. So therefore, the same way, the first part about Kol Achozaba Kol Mashana Yad Al Achatona is also, you should know, that is just as much black letter halacha, and that's how it is. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef says, never mind the matter of Ein Seder, the Mishnah, and all of that. Just the fact that the Rebbe formulated that Mishnah, putting those two halachas back to back, indicates that the halacha, that they're both meant to be. This is how the halacha is, and there's no arguing with it. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos says just the fact that it says as a statement, Kol Mashana Yad Al Achatona, so meant to say we should understand the halacha is like that statement, and there's no playing around with it. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef says, well, in that case, it's very clear the halacha is like that. So therefore, why is Rav Huna having to tell us the halacha is like Rabbi Huda? All of that, of course, was a bit of a digression from the topic that we were talking about over here, which was that when it comes to loans, then Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha had said there's a difference between a loan b'shtar and baal peh, and one of them you can collect from the goy, the one al peh, because ma'asul miyadam, and the other one not, and that led us into this whole discussion. So now the Gemara is further. We're going to digress and talk about some other cases where the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. We talked about, by the way, most recently in Shavuos, Tosfos discusses in a couple of places in Shas that Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha may actually be the son of Rabbi Akiva, and he would be called ben Korcha, literally meaning the son of the bald one, because Rabbi Akiva we find was bald. Tosfos doesn't necessarily like that idea, because why would we call him ben Korcha? Why not call him Rabbi Yeshua ben Rabbi Akiva? There is an interesting explanation. That Rabbi Akiva was already previously married and either divorced or widowed by the time he met Rachel, Kabbal Savor's daughter, and they got married. So then he had a son from that first marriage. So that son may have been Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, and therefore, since it was of course many years from then until his father became the great famous Talmid Chacham Rabbi Akiva, then therefore they called him Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, and the name stuck. But Tosfos says anyway, not necessarily. It may just be that his father's name was Korcha. Okay. So the Gemara brings here some other dinim where the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Turn it up, bottom, we learn in a braisa. Lo yoma odom lachaveira. A person cannot tell another person on Shabbos, hanira shatamid imi la'erev. Let's see that whether you'll stand with me this evening. In other words, it actually says the hanira is ata nira. Now we're going to see. So you're going to tell him on Shabbos, let's see whether on Motzei Shabbos you're going to come and be with me, where you understand that it means that he's going to come and do work for you. That's according to Rashi, that the Hanira is a statement. According to Tosfos learns a little differently. The Hanira is a question. Does it look to you like you'll be able to come and be with me this evening? Either way, the point is that means that you're implying to him, I need to hire you for a job, Motzei Shabbos, and therefore I want you to be there. You're not allowed to do that because you're not allowed to talk about business on Shabbos. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha Omer, but Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says, Omer Adam Lachaveret, Hanira Shatamid Imi La'erev. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says, you are allowed to say that because you're not actually asking him to do work for you. It's considered more. The Gemara explains in Shabbos, Dibur also hear her mutter. You're not allowed to speak about business on Shabbos, but you are allowed to think about it. And here, you're not actually mentioning any business. All you're saying is, Hanira Shatamid Imi La'erev. So therefore, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says that would be allowed because you're not actually mentioning anything about work. So does that mean, in other words, is the underlying machlokas pack of whether hear her is maybe according to the Tanakh, hear her would in fact be also and according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha it's allowed, or is it in fact that there's not, everybody agrees that hear her is mutter, but the question is whether this amounts to actually asking him for work. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says that it's allowed. And Amar Rama Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechon, Hilchsak Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. This is another example where the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, and you are allowed to tell a yid, be ready. So you can ask him. So now Shulchan Aruch brings like Tosfos his understanding that the hanira is not a statement. Let's see that you'll be able to be with me tonight, but rather that it's more like Tosfos says that it's a question. You're asking him, you're asking him, do you think you'll be able to be ready for tonight? But now you can't tell him a statement, be ready tonight. Then you have a machlokas, you have a machlokas who's showing him whether that applies to speaking to a goy and then telling him that. So the Hagoy Sasheli notes that are printed together with the Rosh say you're not allowed to do that. A Yid would be allowed to, but a Goy not, because with a Goy it's more clear that you're doing it in order to hire him. Tosfos in the relevant Gemara and Shabbos brings that and says that no, the same din would apply to a Yid or a Goy, and in the end, the halacha is paskin. That doesn't matter whether a Jew or a goy. You're allowed to tell them hanir. You're allowed to ask them hanir shetamid imil erev. Does it seem that you'll be able to be around after Shabbos? Really, the mutual understanding that means for work, but you're not actually saying so. Okay.
Doesn't the Torah say davar davar?
It says in the pasuk for davar davar, right? Well, that's the point. Dibur also hiruhu mutter. So this kind of thing is considered a form of hiruhu. It's not. You're not saying, "Come, I want you to be available for work on Matzah Shabbos." You're just saying, "Do you think you'll be able to be with me Matzah Shabbos?" So therefore, that's one way of understanding it, that it means in effect that's only hiruhu. They both know what you mean, but nobody's saying anything about work.
It's not hiruhu. It's spoken. It's dibur.
It is dibur, but it's not dibur of work. It's dibur of, are you going to be here? That's all. So again, you have two ways.
Dibur of work.
Okay. You have two explanations among Rishonim. One explanation that Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha considers that hirur, since no words have been exchanged about actual work. That's a Tosfos Rabbeinu Elchanan learns that way. And then you have the Ritva learns that no, sure, it is considered dibur, but it's not dibur she'ene shalom. It's not a complete thing. He's not saying, are you going to be with me for work? He's saying like a half a thing, and therefore would that kind of thing be allowed or not? Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says, and especially he's saying, as Tosfos says, like a question, will you be able to? He's not even saying for sure, be here, and therefore it would be mutter. That's not considered
without the Torah. The Torah doesn't qualify.
Avram Moshe, I can assure you that Rabbeinu Elchanan and the Ritva knew that the Torah says v'daber, that the Pasuk says v'daber dover. And nevertheless, they were explaining that this is not considered v'daber dover for one or the other of those reasons. V'daber dover means to say, will you do work with me Matzah Shabbos? It does not include the skill. According to the Chachamim, it does include this kind of thing as well. According to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, it doesn't. And we're saying the Halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Okay.
But you can say it.
That you can say, Hanira, can you ask, Hanira Shekamed Imila Erev, does it look like you're going to be able to be with me tonight? Yes. Yeah.
So you can say to someone on Shabbos, tomorrow morning we're going to buy something.
No, this is, you're making a mistake. This is why I have stressed that we're talking about a question. Does it look like you're going to be able to be here tonight or tomorrow morning? So you're not mentioning anything about work. You're not even saying for sure be here. You're saying, does it look like you're going to be able to be here?
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing, that kind of thing. There's enough leeway in it that therefore such a thing is mutter. Okay. Another case where the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Tana Rabbanan, Hanisha l'chacham b'timei. If a person asks a rav for a psach din on something, and the chacham told him that this thing is tamei, lo yishol lachacham acher, lo yishol lachacham v'yitar. He's not allowed now to go and ask another chacham, another rav to be matir, to say that it's tahor. Chacham, lachacham v'oser. Similarly, if he asked one rav and he said it's oser, lo yishol v'yatir lachacham v'yatir. Then he's not allowed to ask another talmud chacham. He's not allowed to ask another rav to be matter it. So Rashi elsewhere explains the reason is because of covered for the first rav. The first rav said that it's oser, then it wouldn't be then it's not the covered dick to go and ask another rav. According to that, it comes out that Rashi says if the first chacham is willing to be moichel and is covered, then it would be fine. On the other hand, different Rishonim talk about, Tosfos talks about, and Tosfos, one thing Tosfos says is that Now the one himself who asked the Shaila would not be allowed to go to another Rav unless Tosfos says, if he says to the second Rav, I already asked Rav Pliny and he asked it for me, then that kind of thing you can do. If he says, he goes to a second Rav, he says, you know, I already asked the Shaila to Rav Pliny and he said also, or Tomei or whatever, and now I'm asking, then the Chacham himself should be careful to not be Matir in a case like that, unless he really has reason to see that the first Chacham was blatantly wrong, Talmud by Mishnah or whatever. But otherwise, for somebody else to ask is certainly not a problem. So Rashi elsewhere explains sort of the covet of the Chacham. There are a number of Rishonim who learn that the problem is once the first Rav actually said that it's Osir, then that's it. It becomes Osir. There's a concept that once a Rav paskins on something, then basically that creates a reality over there. The reality is shaped according to Torah. So it wouldn't just be for the covered of the first Chacham. It would actually be a bunch of Rishonim say the reason is because according to Rashi's reason, that's because the covered of the Chacham means b'dievet. If you did, then fine. But a whole bunch of Rishonim say that no. The problem is that once he said that it's Osir, it actually becomes Osir. It actually becomes a Chatichas Isir, and therefore now the second Rav has no right to paskin differently. So here is where Tosfos says that's one thing if you inform the second Rav of what the first one said, and he has reason to say that there's actually reason to change it because the first one was making a mistake and something blatant in halacha, then fine. You have a lot of discussion. What about second chacham is greater than the first one? You have a lot of discussion about various angles in and of that. Tosfos also mentions if the first chacham was matir, then the second one would be able to aser, because if that would follow more the second svara, that it's a matter of that it became a matter of iser, and therefore you can't be matir it. But here it's the other way around. It was still determined to be heter, so therefore there might not be a problem with another rav saying that it's aser. Okay. So that itself is a machlokas. That itself is a machlokas as well, whether you can do that. So the Braisa continues. Hoyushnayim. What happens if there were two rabbonim? Echad metamev, echad metaher, and one of them is saying that's tomei and the other one tahor. Echad osev, echad matir. One of them is saying that's osir and the other one mutter. So then it depends. Im hoya echad mem godo mechaverei b'chochmo v'minyan. If one of them was greater than the other one in chokhma and in minyan, chokhma means pashat his knowledge and his ability his knowledge in Torah and his ability to analyze things in Torah and medama milsa milsa, to compare one thing to another, which is a great deal of what paskin and halacha is all about. That would be chokhma, but minyan would be there's a few different explanations among Rishonim. What it means by minyan means that he's older, means he has more chokhma agreeing with him. Anyway. So if one of them has those advantages, it can also mean the Ritva gives another explanation, that it means that he learned under his Rebbeim for longer than the other one. Anyway, so then Holach Achrav, then you follow him and Paskin like him. Being Lav, if not, if they're both equally on the same level, Holach Achrav Machmer, then you should go according to whichever one is Machmer. Now comes Rabbi Yishro ben Korcha Omer. Rabbi Yishro ben Korcha says it's not so simple to just say that you always say that it's machmer. B'shal Torah holach achra machmer. When it comes to a question of something daraisa, then you should follow the one who's machmer. B'shal Sofrim, when it comes to something rabbanon, holach achra mekel, then you can follow the more lenient opinion. Because after all, it's only a suffix rabbanon and suffix rabbanon lakola. So now, again, Amar Rav Yosef, Hilchasak Rav Yishro ben Korcha, here also the halacha is like Rav Yishro ben Korcha, that you do have that distinction, again, when the two chachamim are equal, that then you can follow the more lenient opinion. There are actually understandings based on, the Rambam mentions this din in Hilchas Mamrim, and he doesn't draw the distinction when it comes to things that Rabbanon, between greater and lesser Rabbanon. He just says when it comes to things that Rabbanon, you can be Mekel, and the Noisa Kalim and the Rambam in fact understand that Rabbi Shrov ben Korcha is saying that always when it comes to Divrei, that not only is, in other words, according to the first way we're understanding is Rabbi Shrov ben Korcha is saying within the opinion of the Chachamim, you Chachamim are saying that when you have two equal Chachamim, then you go according to, then it depends, min haTorah midrabbanan, but when they're unequal, then I agree with you, Tanakama, or is Rabbi Shrub and Kocha disagreeing with the whole statement of the Tanakama, and saying that to begin with, when there were two opinions, you would always go according to the more machmir and divrei Torah, and always according to the more mekel and divrei seferim, whether they're of the same caliber or not. Tosfos in this connection mentions that Rashi would say, whenever you have in Gemara and Ikka D'Amri, whenever the Gemara has two versions of a discussion among Amiroyim, then Rashi would always paskin like the one that's Machmir, when it's Daraisa, and then Midrabanan, he would always follow the last one. Tosfos says that no, the Halacha, the Tosfos then brings, the reverse says that no, we would always go according to the first Loshen, and Rabbi Natan says that, and then Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Shimshin bring other opinions about when it's Daraisa l'chumra, when it's Darabonon l'kola, meaning like Rabbi Shimshin Korcha. Rabbi Shimshin says that you would have to look at this sugya and analyze and see which one fits more logical based on other places in Gemara, and then there are Rishonim who say that you would always go like the second Lashon. So that's another of the rules of Paskin and Halacha is based on our Gemara over here and how exactly you understand Rabbi Shimshin Korcha's opinion. So the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Korcha. What that means in practice is going to be subject to these various opinions of Rishonim. Okay, here's another case involving Rabbi Shimon Korcha. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa. Now we know that a gazlan or an amaoret is not trustworthy as far as trumas and maestris. The amaoret, we know throughout Shas, we're not always careful in taking maestris, so you can't rely on them that something is maestris. And you have a gazlan is also suspect of that kind of thing. So now, Rashi says the Braisa doesn't specify. Rashi says that the V'cholon, the Braisa starts by saying, and all of them, Rashi explains that all of them refers to Gazlonim and Amei Oretz. Tosfos has several questions on that and says that no, it refers to an Amei Oretz who previously, now an Amei Oretz starts out being suspect about not being careful with Trumas and Maestris, then though eventually he might accept on himself Divrei Chaverus, he might accept on himself that, you know what, from now on I'm going to be careful with Trumas and Maestris and separate them properly and handle them properly, etc. And then what happened was he slid back and he ended up being careless again like an Amei Oretz. Now he wants to again accept Divrei Chaverus. Can we accept him or not? So Tosfos says that's the case that we're talking about over here. So again, according to Rashi, we're talking about someone who, to begin with, is trying to do tshuva for the first time and become a chover. According to Tosfos, we're talking about somebody who previously was doing the right thing and then backslid. So v'cholan shechozer behen, all of them, if they do tshuva, ein makablan oisan elamis, we can never accept them and consider them a chover from now on. We can never trust them. That's what Rabbi Meir says. Rabbi Yehuda says, it depends. Chozru behen b'matmonius, if they do tshuva in secret, ein makabel noisan, then we can't accept them in tshuva because then they're not necessarily doing tshuva so sincerely. They're not doing so sincerely. The Ran explains we're more concerned that they might go back to doing badly because, after all, nobody knows that they did tshuva, so when they do the same bad thing again, nobody's going to know. And again, according to Tosfos, we're talking about somebody who, to begin with, was doing good for a while and then backslid. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda says, if they did trip of Matmonius in secret, ein makabonois, and we don't accept them because we don't know whether they're sincere and whether we can trust them in the future. But if they do tshuva in public, makabonois, then we can accept them. Ikadamri, another version, we just said, you know, we talk about the Ikadamris in Shas, there's one right here. Ikadamri, others say, to understand Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, also divrehem b'matmonius, not whether they did tshuva in private or in public, it's whether to begin with they had done their averus in private or in public. If they had done them in private and now they're doing tshuva, therefore they weren't causing a chilul Hashem b'fahesia, then Rabbi Yehuda in the second version would say mekablan oisan, you can accept them in tshuva. But if they did their averus in public, then according to the second version, in mekablan oisan, then we can't accept them in tshuva, because now they were so chutzpahdik, and they did in such a way that created a public chilul Hashem, and therefore Rashi says, Rabbi Yehuda would say you can never accept them, you can never fully accept them and trust them in tshuva. And again, according to Tosfos, we'd be talking about specifically where previously they had accepted these divrei chaverus, and then they went bad, and now the question is whether they worked so hard, and they were doing tshuva, and they were doing betzina, and now So in other words, Tosfos would explain that we're distinguishing between when they accepted the Divrei Chaveilus, were they careful even in private to be careful with the mitzvahs, and now then, so now they slid back. Fine, we shouldn't push them away. We should still accept them in Shuvah if they were nichshol. But if they never did it, only before Hesia, they only did it before Hesia. They never did it in private. Ein l'kabel noisan, because you never know. To begin with, they may have all along in private been doing Averis, and nobody's going to know. So therefore, fakir, that would be a reason not to accept them in Shuvah. Now, Rav Shimon.
Wait.
One second. Hold that thought until we finish. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shurban Korcha say, no, Ben Kach, private, public, Chil Hashem, not Chil Hashem, did it both private and public, so we know what they were doing versus not. Either way, Mekablan Ois and Mekablan, we do accept them when they're doing Shuvah. Kenema, as the Pasuk says, Shuvu Vonim Shovavim. Hashem says, return, you backsliding children. Shovavim, Rash says, is Mashma, Mizit, that they're amazing, and they're doing the Fahesi, because the word Shovav, Rashi explains, is Loshen Merit Vegaiva. It's a Loshen of rebelliousness and Gaiva. So therefore, so even though Shovavim, nevertheless, Hashem is saying, Shuvu, return, and I will accept your Shuvah. And Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Ish Kva'akot, Amar Rabbi Yechon and Hilchta, Ka'isa Azug, the halacha is like that pair of Chachamim, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shimon Korcha, that it doesn't matter, no matter what, we are going to accept their Tshuva. And again, according to the different understandings of Tosfos and the other Rishonim, then also it's going to affect what it means, where were they doing their Averas, what had they previously accepted, and then backslid, etc., etc. So Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shimon Korcha are saying, no matter what, Hashem will accept their Tshuva, and therefore we should accept them as well. In fact, actually, Marshall elsewhere points out that because it says Shovavim, even if they repeated it several times, then therefore Shovavim, in fact, another explanation is Shovavim means plural. They've done it a number of times, and nevertheless, every time, no matter how they do Tshuva, Hashem will accept them, and therefore we need to accept them as well.
So that's the point. I mean, for the Chet HaEgel, it was in public, and Hashem accepted it.
One thing you have to realize is sometimes we do draw a distinction between what Hashem accepts and what we accept. Later in the Masechta, further on in this Perek on Daf Yud Zayin, the Gemara discusses that a person who was involved in Minus, a person who was involved in ideas of Apikorsus, we don't necessarily accept his Tshuva. Because the Gemara says over there, is very, very mentally absorbing, and it's very likely they still retain those attitudes and is not necessarily going to leave them. And the Rambam brings that lahalacha. On the other hand, elsewhere in Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam brings that a person can do Tshuva for anything, and Hashem will accept his Tshuva no matter what. So they ask the Rambam, how does that not contradict each other? So a person who was involved in Minus, do we accept his Tshuva or not? And the Rambam drew a distinction. Hashem knows what a person is thinking. So Hashem can accept his Tshuva regardless and know whether he's truly given up his Minus. We, based in a boss of Adam, can't know that, so we have to take into account the fact that the Gemara says there that Minus is very attractive, and it's very hard for a person to give it up entirely, and the likelihood is that he still harbors these beliefs in secret. Well, here we're not talking about Minos, here we're talking about Maisi B'Poyel, so you would have that there wouldn't have to be that distinction between Hashem and us. Once Rabbi Shrub and Korcha is saying Hashem will accept a person's Shrub no matter what, then we also have to accept them no matter what, and not worry about the fact that it was B'Fa Hesia B'Tzina, Chil Hashem not, etc. Yeah.
I mean, it says the Tzelem Elokim. We have to do what Hashem does, even if he knows well than us.
Well, that's true, but not always. I mean, for example, again, say, for example, a person is chayiv Mrs. Bastin. He does Tshuva. Hashem can forgive him. Bastin Shomata still needs to give him Mrs. Bastin. That's their job. So you don't always say that how Hashem judges a person is how we have to judge them. But here, in effect, Rabbi Shurban Korcha is saying that that's how it is.
Hmm.
Okay, let's go on. The Mishnah says, So we said in the first Mishnah that for 3 days before Goyish Achaga, you're not allowed to do these various kinds of business with them. So now Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Rabbi Shmuel says, as we learned on Daf Vav, Shloisha Lefneim or Shloisha Lachareim Oser, it's not just 3 days before the Chaga, it's also 3 days after the Chaga that you're not allowed to do business with them, because the idea is, in other words, obviously after the Chaga, it's already after it, but nevertheless, Rabbi Shmuel considers that the idea would still be, he's still right after his chaga, he's still very much thinking of, he still very much has his getchka on his mind, and therefore he's still likely to go and thank his getchka for the good business deal or whatever that he did. So therefore, so Rabbi Shmuel says, so therefore Rabbi Shmuel says it's also after the Chag as well. And then the Ravid gives another reason, because the Chum made a Gzeira, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the Chum made a Gzeira 3 days after, so you don't confuse it with 3 days before. Anyway, the Chum say, no, Lifnei Adain, also La'achnei Adain Mutter, it's only also before the Chagas, not after it. Now, that sounds repetitious. We already had that in the first Mishnah, so the Gemara is going to explain that here these Rabbanan Basroi, as we call them, these later Chachamim, do in fact have a nuance of difference with the Tanakhama of the first Mishnah. So first, the Gemara points out what we already learned on Daf Vav. Omer of Tachlif about Rav Dimi Omer Shmuel Yom Aleph or Yom Noitzvi in uncensored Gemaras. The Divrei Rav Shmuel Olam Osir Sunday or the day of the Noitzvi, which is also Sunday, according to Rav Shmuel, would always be Osir because, as we learned on Daf Vav, since Rav Shmuel holds three before and three after, and since he holds that the three doesn't include the Chaga itself, so it comes out you can't do business with them on Sunday because they actually worship on that, and not on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because the 3 days after it, and not on Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, because the 3 days before it. So it comes out, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that a person who worships on Sunday, you would never be able to do business with him within the guidelines that we're saying over here. Are we talking about Noitzrim as in Christians? Are we talking about Noitzrim as in, as the Meiri says, a sun worshiper? Is that we discussed on Daf Vav, the ins and outs of that, what Yom Aleph or Yom Noitzrim means in this context? The Rambam, for example, takes it as meaning the Christians, and he says flat out in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, you Noitzrim Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and he says the Christians are flat out Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and Sunday is their weekly Chagah. Therefore, under the circumstances that we're saying, where these didn't apply, you wouldn't be able to do business with them Thursday, Friday, or Shabbos. So halacha is not like a bishmal, so you would be allowed to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Again, as we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, for a variety of reasons, we don't necessarily apply these dinim, besides everything that we mentioned over there. I think I also mentioned over there, there's the point that Rishonim say, based on a Gemara later on in our parak, that these dinim of the 3 days before may not apply in Chutz La'aretz anyhow. Okay. We said in the Mishnah of a Chacham Omer Lifnei Adain also La'achar Adain Mutter Chula. We said that the Chacham say that it's only also before their Chagas and not after them. So the Gemara says Chacham Ma'ayinu Tanakama. Well, they're just repeating what the Tanakama said in the first Mishnah. What's the point of that? The answer is, so the Gemara is going to give several answers. First of all, Hein B'loy Adehen Ikebenayhu. The argument between the Tanakhama of the first Mishnah and the Chachamim of our Mishnah may be, do the 3 days include the Chagah or not? Tanakhama Sava Hein B'loy Adehen. The Tanakhama would hold the 3 days, meaning besides for the holiday itself. So meaning, in other words, like we talked about before, let's say if one of their holidays is Xmas, it's December 25th, so it would mean you would be also according to the Tana of the first Mishnah to do business with them on the 22nd, 3rd, and 4th, as well as the 25th itself, which is the Chagah. Whereas the Chachamim of our Mishnah hold, so Hein Ve'edehen, the 3 days includes the Chagah itself, and therefore it would be only also the 23rd, 4th, and 5th. So that's one understanding. Ibori Seima, a second understanding, you can say, Nosav and Nosan Ikebenayu. The Nafkamina between the Tanakhama of the first Mishnah and the Chachamim of our Mishnah would be, what if a person was over and did business with them? We touched on this before. Tanakhama Sava Nosav and Nosan Mutter. The Tanakhama would hold that, but the Yebed, you're allowed to have Hanah from the merchandise. We said, also losses. For losses in Maim, it's also to do business with them. But once you already did it, then as we learned on Vav and Beis, we had a machlokas amiroyim about it. We had machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, whether it would be mutter or not. So we can say that the tanoim of the respective mishnayos have the same machlokas. The tana of the first mishnah holds that b'diyeved you'd be allowed to have anah from it, as we talked about over there. Maybe not if it was actually on the chaga itself, but at least if it was during the 3 days before. Whereas the Chacham of our Mishnah would hold, when they say Lifnei Adain Osir, then it means it's Osir even B'diyeved, even you did do business with them, then that merchandise or money or whatever would be Osir B'hanah. So that's a second way of understanding the Machlokas. A third way, the boisem de Shmuel Ikebinayu. Another way you could understand is that the nafkamina between the Tanakhama and the Chachamim would be regarding Shmuel's din. Da'amah Shmuel, that Shmuel says, as we were just talking about, Bagoila, outside Eretz Yisrael, where we're under them, we're ruled over by the Goyim, and we can't really, it's hard to be able to not do business with them. First of all, Rashi points out, in the Goyla, the Goyim are not so fanatical about their Avodah Zarah. So first of all, they're not so fanatical about it, so therefore we're less concerned that as a result of it, they're not so devoted to it, so there's less of a concern that if you do business with them, they're going to go thank their getchka. Second of all, Rashi says, we have reason to be afraid of them. We live under their domination. And therefore, there's more of a concern. If we avoid doing business with them on certain days, they're going to realize it, and it's going to cause anti-Semitism and cause all kinds of problems. Later on, in the Perek, when the Gemara brings Shmuel's din there again, Rashi there mentions another point. It's partially impossible. The fact is, we have our parnasa mostly through them, and therefore we don't really have an option to not engage in business with them for several days at a time. Anyways, the Shmuel says that din by goyla in osur ela yom adam. Shmuel says that only the chaga itself would be osur, because none of these considerations are going to apply. One day you don't do business with them, they're not going to notice it so much, and it's one day we can manage without doing business with them. B'chola. So that would be the argument. Tanakama islay the Shmuel. The Tanakama would agree with what Shmuel says. Because since the Tanakama the Tana of the first Mishnah didn't specify, then we can say it means that he means only when the Goyim are not overpowering us. So then when Jews are in control of a country, then we have those dinim, but otherwise not. Rabban and Basuri, Laslo de Shmuel, whereas the Chacham of our Mishnah would not say that. They would say author blanket statement. There is a usual rule. Rashi points out that when you have two different opinions and they don't specify what the second opinion doesn't specify in what way he argues with the first one, we have a rule. Rashi says, "Latafuye osu," they're coming to add something. So therefore, we can understand that they're adding a dimension of Isser that the first Tana had not. The first Tana had said that apparently implied that the Isser is only when Jews are running the country and running the economy. And the Tana Basra, the Chacham of our Mishnah, would be the Tafuye. They'd be adding on top of that and saying even when not. So that's another way of understanding the Machlokas between the Mishnahis. Ibori Sema, yet another possibility, Dinochama Modi Ikebenayu. Another possible, fourth possibility is you can say that the Chachamim and the two Mishnahis are arguing about whether we accept the din of Nochama Modi. The Tanya, Nochama Modi Omer, Hamodi, by the way, means that he came from Modi, which is an area of nowadays Iran. So very much in Yonah D'Yomer, and the Eivishta should help, and in the schos of him and other Chacham throughout the generations who came from Iran, that were rid of that danger from them once and for all. Anyway, Nochama Modi Omer, ain't also Ela Yom Echad Lefnei Edein, it's only also Nochama Modi, says one day before their Chogas, not three. So Tanakama lusted Nochama Modi. Very well then, the Tanakama might be disagreeing with Nochama Modi. The Tanakama would disagree with Nochama Modi because he clearly says 3 days. But Rabban and Basroi Islud Nochama Modi, the second Chacham might agree with Nasan Amodi because the second Chacham, the Chacham of our Mishnah, don't say how many days. They just say Lifnei Edein Osir La'achar Edein Mutter. They don't specify how many days Lifnei Edein. So very well, according to them, it may, according to Nochama Modi, it's only one day, and the Chacham of our Mishnah may agree with that as well. So that would be a fourth way of understanding the Machlokas between the two Mishnahs. Okay, having mentioned Nochama Modi, let's get into his opinion a little bit, and his opinions about various other topics in Halacha. So getting back to what we said, Nochama Modi Oymer, Eina Osir Ela Yom Echad Lifnei Edehen, it's only also one day before their Chogas. The other Chacham answered him, Nishtaka Hadogo V'loy Ne'amar. This matter is sunken and is not said. Rashi has two explanations. One is nobody ever said such a thing. So where are you coming up with this kind of idea? So in other words, it's a mistake. It's 3 days, not one day. Rashi's second explanation is that this matter should not go out. In other words, fine, you want to keep this explanation in the Beis Medrash, but I don't want you to be publicizing it. We don't want you to be publicizing it. So they want to ask why, what's wrong? Isn't Nochama Modi entitled to his opinion? Don't you have the second, the Chacham of our Mishnah who agree with him? So what's the problem? So the answer is because exactly, man chachamim, nochem amodi, because the chachamim of our Mishnah would be nochem amodi, and therefore the chacham was saying, you're a das yachid over here, nobody else ever said such a thing before, and therefore we don't accept that there's any such legitimate opinion. Okay, so now the Gemara brings a number of other dinim where nochem amodi disagreed with the chachamim, and each time they said the same kind of thing to him. And a reason might be, actually, there was an explanation in Chasdei David on the Tosefta, that again, we just said that according to Shmuel, the Goyim and Chutz Laaretz are not so fanatical about their Avodah Zarah. Well, very well then, Nochem Amadi holds of that concept, so there he himself is from Modai, after all, from Chutz Laaretz, and therefore he says one day is enough. The Chachamim who are in Eretz Yisrael are saying that no such thing was ever heard, meaning you in Eretz Yisrael, there's no way you could say such a thing. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanya Idach, we learn in another braisa. So here's another case where Nochem Amadi and the other Chacham disagree. Nochem Amadi Omer, now, later on in the Perek, it talks about dinim, that you're not allowed to sell animals to Goyim. The Gemara mentions a couple of, even not around the time of the Chogas. There's a reason for it. The Gemara explains later on in the Perek is because first you may rent it or lend it to a Goy and he's going to do Malacha with it on Shabbos. So therefore you're not allowed to sell it to him when it's almost Shabbos and then you're going to have. So you have the Gemara, there's a whole discussion about it later on in the Perek about the ins and outs of these Halachas when you're allowed and not allowed to sell them animals. So now, so Bryce says, Nochem Amadi Rabbi Nochem Amadi says you're allowed to sell them a male horse and a male old horse at a time of war. Because nobody's going to be buying such a horse. It's not something common. So therefore, you're not going to learn from that to sell other kinds of animals. The whole idea of not selling them is because you might come to lend to them, as it talks about later in the Perek. So therefore, so here, it's milsa de loishkicha, it's something uncommon, and therefore, Nochem Amadi says there's no problem with it. Tosfos points out, brings from Rabbeinu Yochanan, the reason why we're mentioning a male is because the male wants to go after the females. So therefore, so now, in war, instead of listening to its owner's instructions and directing him where he needs to go in the battle, instead it's going to go after its own tivus and therefore end up causing its rider to be killed. And old is the same thing because it's not so strong, so therefore the owner is not going to rely on it. So in other words, we don't mean zokin, we don't mean according to that, zocho zokin, that's both old, that's both male and old, it's one or the other. And then Tosfos brings other points about what it would mean. In any case, the Nochem Amadi says there are certain heterim to sell them the horse. The Raiva gives another point as well that, on the contrary, he does need the stallion, he does need this male horse for the war. So therefore, he's certainly not going to be doing malacha with it, and since it's old, he's not going to, it's going to be fighting in the thick of the battle, so therefore there's less of a problem that he's going to be doing malacha with it. So kind of the opposite of what Tosfos is saying. In any case, Nochem Amadi allows that. And again, the Chumtum, the Shtakad of Namar, such a thing should be sunken and not said, meaning either again they're saying to him, nobody ever says such a thing, and that opinion is not legitimate, or they're saying, let's keep it private between ourselves and don't start publicizing it. So again, the Gemara asks, Vayika ben Beseder, Dekoi Kavasei, why, he's not just a Das Yachid, you have ben Beseder, who agrees with him. The Tanan, we learn later on in our parak, ben Beseder, Matur Besus, ben Beseder, allows you to sell a horse for a goy. Because again, the main thing you do with a horse is for a person to ride on it, and that's not a malacha that would be chayiv chatas. So what's the problem with Nochem Amadi's opinion? So the answer is ben beseder lemaflig ben schorim lemakevus. The difference is ben beseder is not distinguishing between male and female horses. He says it would be allowed, even a female horse. He says it would be allowed, even a young horse. Because with him, the whole thing is, where a horse is usually used for riding, not for anything else, and riding is not a malacha that would be also on Shabbos, because a person can carry their own weight. But when it comes to Nochem Amadi, midikom maflegmen, schorim lenakevus, since he's drawing a distinction between male and female, and between young and old, it must be kirabonim svirale, that means he holds, like the chachamim, against ben beseder, that it's not a matter of And it's not a matter of that he might just ride on it. He may also use it for, he may also use it in warfare. And then within the Chacham's opinion, then such a thing, there's no validity to this opinion. Say the Chachamim to Nachum Amadi. So in other words, they're telling him, if you held like Ben Beseir and you said across the board, you can sell him horses, fine. But once you're distinguishing between old and young and all that, then already your opinion lacks any basis. So another one, the Gemara says Tanya. We learn another Braisa, Nochem Amodi Omer. As far as dinim of Maestris, Hasheves, Sheves, which is a spice called anise in English. So now. You always it's an herb it grows as a vegetable, not on a tree, and you often have with such things, it depends whether you're growing it for its leaves or for its seeds. So Nochem Amori Omer Sheves Misaser Zera VeYerek VeZirin. Nochem Amori says this plant, this Sheves, this anise, or actually I think Sheves is translated as dill, whatever. So whether you harvest it for the seeds and you're going to be using the seeds, or Yerek, or whether it's still the seeds haven't developed yet and you're going to use the leaves, or Zirin, or you're harvesting it at the time when it's in the middle of its growth and you're harvesting it for the stems, either way, Rashi translated it as anise. So yeah. So either way, whether you pick it when it's in its first stage of growth and you only have leaves yet, or whether it's already developed stems, or whether you wait until it's developed seeds, either way, Nochem Amori says, all of them you have to take meiser, because it's a normal thing to eat it in any of those ways. Again, Omer l'chacham nishtaka adov v'leinemer. The Chacham said it's nishtaka adov v'leinemer. This is a mistake. There's no such thing. The main thing you grow anise for is for the seeds, and therefore there's no reason to take meiser from the leaves or anything like that. So the Gemara asks again, what do the Chacham have a problem with his opinion? Doesn't Rabbi Eliezer agree with Nochem Amadi in that? The Tanan, we learn in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Hasheves Misaseres Zera VeYerek VeZirin. And the answer is Hosam VeDeginunisa, because Rabbi Eliezer is talking about this Sheves, this anise that grows in gardens. So then you may grow it for any of those purposes. But when it grows wild, then you only use the seeds. It actually says you use them in a similar way to mustard. So now the Chacham is saying to Nochem Amori, you're saying that even if it grows in the field, you would have to take meister from the leaves or from the stems, as the case may be. No, yishtaka adavav leinemer, there's no such thing. You want to say that it's only in a garden, like Rabbi Eliezer, fine, but otherwise not. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. So far, we've had a bunch of dinim that every time Nochem Amadi says something, the Chum answer in the Shtaka Adav Avleinemer. So now we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and the Chum we're going to defend him. What are we going to have every time he says something? They're going to tell him the Shtaka Adav Avleinemer. We're going to find one halacha where the halacha is in fact like Nochem Amadi. But we'll continue with that tomorrow, Beis Hashem.